happened in New Jersey on Friday. That's a look at the news.
Straight ahead on Our World, planning for a comet rendezvous, a high court ruling on sharing MP3s and videos over the internet, and research on how sleep can help your memory.
Evolution has created sleep for a very specific reason. We have to start to learn that we can't shortchange either our brain and our bodies of sleep because there are consequences.
Those stories, a space shuttle update, and more. I'm Art Chimes. Welcome to VOA's science and technology magazine, Our World. The U.S. space agency NASA has given the go-ahead to launch the space shuttle on July 13th. The decision by NASA managers was announced this week after a two-day flight readiness review. This will be the first shuttle flight since February 2003, when the shuttle Columbia broke up as it was re-entering the Earth's atmosphere with the loss of the shuttle orbiter and the deaths of all seven astronauts on board. Since then, NASA has been working at improving the safety of the shuttle program, with special emphasis on the cause of the Columbia accident, debris that broke off the shuttle assembly at launch, damaging a wing. But on Thursday, Associate NASA Administrator Bill Reedy said safety improvements were not limited to that problem.
We said immediately after the accident that we would find out what happened and we would fix it and we would return to flying safely again. The scope of work was not limited to eliminating the proximate cause of the accident. We went literally from stem to stern in the vehicle throughout ground processing and management of the program to make sure that we did come back smarter and stronger and safer as a result.
The decision to launch comes despite the conclusion of an independent panel that NASA had failed to meet three key requirements for safety. NASA Chief Michael Griffin was asked about that when he appeared before the House of Representatives Science Committee on Tuesday. VOA's David McAlary reports.
A commission of independent aviation experts NASA asked to assess the safety upgrades says the agency has fallen short on some of them, but in general has made the three remaining shuttles safe enough to fly again. The commissioners praised the work NASA has done to advance shuttle safety, and Mr. Griffin echoes that view.
I believe I have acquired a pretty good picture of where we are with respect to the technical requirements to return to flight. I've been tremendously impressed with the work that the team has done executing those improvements.
When shuttle flights resume, they will continue the process of building the International Space Station, which the United States operates with Russia with support from Europe, Canada, and Japan. But a legal constraint could interfere with U.S. participation in the project. A five-year-old U.S. law forbids NASA to pay the Russian Space Agency for station services unless Washington confirms that Moscow has not provided Iran with missile or weapons technology in the previous year. This has not been much of a problem so far, but under current plans, the United States will rely on Russia for emergency escape transportation back to Earth for its crew members once the station is completed. The law would bar that service and, in effect, prohibit U.S. activities on the outpost except when a shuttle is docked there. NASA Administrator Griffin says this situation is a major reason why he wants to replace the aging shuttle fleet by 2010 with a more agile astronaut craft that will allow the United States to maintain its independence in space. David McAlary, VOA News, Washington.
Another space mission is in the news, this one about a phenomena that has long intrigued astronomers and lay people alike. Comets may be beautiful objects that delight observers, but they also have been thought of as omens presaging disaster. As recently as 1910, gas masks were sold to people who feared they would become ill when the Earth passed through the tail of Halley's Comet. Today, astronomers want to learn more about the composition of comets, which are thought to contain ice, rocks, iron, and other materials. The University of Maryland has joined the U.S. space agency NASA in an extraordinary experiment in which a spacecraft will actually slam into a comet. A nearby spacecraft, as well as amateur and professional astronomers here on Earth, are expected to observe the results of the Deep Impact mission. Kemming Kuo wrote our report, read by Barbara Klein.
The Comet Impact mission was suggested by two University of Maryland astronomers, Michael Ahern and Lucy McFadden, coinciding with the release of Deep Impact, a 1998 science fiction movie about a comet on a collision course with Earth. Professors Ahern and McFadden used the film name for their proposal, and in January, 7 years later, NASA launched two spacecraft on a six-month, 430 million kilometer journey to meet with Comet Tempel 1 on July 4th. That's when the comet will be at the closest point to the sun in its orbit. As University of Maryland astronomer Lucy McFadden notes, it will require great precision.
It is a first-of-its-kind mission where we are actually doing an experiment in space, a controlled experiment in space, hitting a bullet with a bullet and watching it with a third bullet. Once they realize what the mission is, it's exciting.
A day before impact, the spacecraft separates into two parts. The smaller section, called the impactor, will actually collide with the comet, as the other section, the flyby spacecraft, uses special cameras to observe the collision from about 500 kilometers away as it flies past at 37,000 kilometers per hour. Many Earthbound viewers will be watching when Deep Impact collides with Comet Tempel 1. Elizabeth Warner, University of Maryland Observatory Director and liaison to amateur astronomers for Deep Impact, says the mission is turning astronomers who normally just observe the skies into active experimenters.
It's a really cool mission because we're actually going to be affecting an object out in space. Up until now, pretty much everything that we have learned about space is by observing. It's a very passive field. You can't learn everything just by looking, so it's going to be very neat to be able to affect something and be able to see its insides a little bit to learn more stuff.
The stuff researchers hope to analyze includes data from the impact crater, expected to be the size of a football field, about 100 meters in diameter. Its shape, depth, size, particles expelled, and chemical reactions. Ms. Warner says it's not unusual for comets and other celestial objects to collide in space, but it is rare to get a good look at such an impact.
We are basically recreating a naturally occurring event that happens in the solar system. The only difference is that rather than having two unknowns, two different comets hitting each other, or, you know, an asteroid and a comet where we don't know enough about either one, we know what the impactor is made of, so we've reduced that much of the equation, and anything that does happen, we can kind of attribute to the comet.
Ms. Warner says when the impactor probe hits the comet, there probably will not be a dramatic flash, but it will brighten to a so-called magnitude 6 object, or roughly the same brightness as the faintest star visible by the naked eye in a rural dark setting.
The comet is actually a very dim comet. One of the things that makes it very good for our mission is that it doesn't have a lot of dust being shed off of it. And so that makes it safe for the spacecraft so that we can fly closer, get better pictures and such. However, that makes it very boring for most amateur astronomers because we rely on the reflected light off of the dust particles for us to be able to see it from here on Earth.
The unique nature of this space experiment means that many telescopes, both on Earth and in space, will be focused on the comet July 4th, or July 3rd, depending on where you are on Earth, as astronomer Lucy McFadden explains.
My colleagues will be at virtually every telescope they can get to. All the great observatories, Chandra, Spitzer, and Hubble will also be observing, and amateur astronomers worldwide will be observing, and they are observing now. It's another thing, the Deep Impact mission is happening now. We are observing the comet every day. We all feel like we're moving at 23,000 miles per hour.
Lucy McFadden is one of the top scientists on the Deep Impact mission. Her colleague, Elizabeth Warner, says Comet Tempel 1 is one of millions of space objects, just another dirty little snowball, but one that happens to be in the right place at the right time.
It's time again for Our World's Website of the Week, and this time we highlight a fascinating online program created by a New York artist who provides a unique and challenging way of looking at the top news stories of the day.
It is a program that automatically selects the top 100 words and pictures in the world every hour based on what's happening in the news. And then it takes those 100 words and pictures and it displays them in a very simple 10 by 10 grid of photographs with the words off to the side.
Jonathan Harris is the artist behind 10by10.org, which takes its name from that array of photographs representing the hour's top news stories. Every 60 minutes, 10by10 captures news from three top online providers and then parses the content.
And looking at those articles every hour, it analyzes the word usage in those articles. And based on the word usage, it extracts the top 100 most meaningful words based on some algorithms that hour in the news. And then for each of those 100 words, it finds a picture from one of the news articles at those three sources. And then it associates the word with the picture and saves it into the 10by10 system.
The result is a grid of 100 thumbnail photos, each associated with a word which displays off to the side. Click on the picture and you get a list of related stories. Often the same picture shows up repeatedly in a 10by10 grid, a feature that Jonathan Harris says many people incorrectly consider a bug.
What it signifies are the very important stories. So if you see a picture that's being repeated 10 times, you can be sure that that's a very important picture this hour, because the words that are associated with that picture are very important words this hour. So the result of that is that, in a way, you get this visual barometer of importance, sort of like you do with a traditional newspaper when you look at the size of a headline.
His 10by10 website was a recent Webby Award winner, beating out industry-leading search site Google in the best navigation category. So catch the news in visual form at 10by10, that's spelled out in words, T-E-N-B-Y-T-E-N, all one word, 10by10.org. Or get the link from our site, voanews.com/ourworld. You're listening to VOA's science and technology magazine, Our World. I'm Art Chimes in Washington. Since at least 1946, computers have been referred to as electronic brains. And why not? They have memory, inputs and outputs, and if they don't have imagination, they certainly can do work that seems suspiciously close to what the human brain can accomplish. But scientists at Cornell University in New York State are offering new evidence to suggest that it's not such a good analogy after all. Participants in a series of experiments were shown pictures of two objects on a computer screen and asked to point to one of them using a computer mouse. In some cases, the names of the two objects were very different, like candle and jacket. But other times, lead researcher Michael Spivey says the mouse movement reflected how the brain parsed the request when asked to point to one of two similar-sounding objects like candle and candy.
And so partway through hearing it, your brain's already starting to do some partial computations on that partial input. So your hand movement actually moves a little bit toward the candle when told click the candy, because your brain's sort of partly thinking that's what it's hearing.
When the objects sound similar, the mouse follows a more indirect path to the correct image, reflecting the brain's processing of the command. At their most basic, digital computers are a collection of on-off switches. You can think of the brain's neurons in sort of the same way, but Dr. Spivey explains that the brain's processing is actually more analog than digital.
You can see that these various modules of the brain that share information actually share it quite continuously. So partway through hearing a word, not only is the language system doing some partial computations about what this, the many words this word could turn out to be, but it's also continuously sharing that information with the motor system.
Cornell University's Michael Spivey. His research was published this week in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Another bit of brain research published this week sheds new light on the relationship between sleep and the ability of the brain to form memories. In an experiment conducted by researchers at Boston's Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and Harvard Medical School, participants practiced tapping out a sequence of numbers on a special keyboard. It's similar to the kind of memory skill a pianist might need to learn a piece of music. After 12 hours, they were tested on how well they remembered the number sequence. In some cases, they got to sleep during that 12-hour period. In other cases, they were awake. Piano students may be told that practice makes perfect, but lead researcher Matthew Walker says practice is only part of the story.
And what we found is that after you learn a memory task, you improve initially when you practice that memory task, but the brain doesn't stop learning, it turns out. Once you finish practice, the brain actually continues to learn in the